Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Broadway Podcast Network presents Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went into the Woods, with me, Ben Rimmelauer. Today's guest, Bernadette Peters, the original witch.
Once upon a time.
Bernadette Peters created the role of the witch in Into the Woods on Broadway. Her extensive resume can no doubt be recited at will by most of the listeners of this podcast. She also created the dual role of Dot and Marie in Sondheim and Lapine's previous collaboration, Sunday in the Park with George, and went on to star in Broadway productions of Sondheim's Gypsy, Follies, and A Little Night Music, as well as the Carnegie Hall concert version of Anyone Can Whistle, City Center's Sondheim-Wynton Marsalis collaboration, A Bed and a Chair, and most recently the West End hit, Sondheim's Old Friends. She's got 3 Tony Awards, having been nominated 7 times for her legendary Broadway career, including performances in Hello, Dolly, Annie, Get Your Gun, The Goodbye Girl, Song and Dance, Mac and Mabel, On the Town, La Strada, and George M., as well as her star-making performance in the off-Broadway smash Dames at Sea. She won the Golden Globe for her performance opposite Steve Martin in Pennies from Heaven, also co-starring with him in The Jerk. She was nominated for a Golden Globe 2 more times for Mel Brooks' Silent Movie and Norman Lear's All's Fair. Her other film roles include It Runs in the Family, Impromptu, Alice, Pink Cadillac, Slaves of New York, Annie, Heartbeeps, and The Longest Yard. She's been nominated for 4 Emmys, and her many television credits include Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist, The Good Fight, Mozart in the Jungle, Smash, Ugly Betty, Will and Grace, Ally McBeal, All in the Family, Maude, Animaniacs, Fairy Tale Theater, The Muppet Show, Saturday Night Live, The Sonny and Cher Show, The Carol Burnett Show, The Ed Sullivan Show, and Inside the Actor's Studio, along with television productions of the musicals George M., Once Upon a Mattress, and Cinderella. She's a sought-after talk show guest, seen on nearly every program produced over the last 60 years, including frequent turns as a guest host on Live with Kelly and Mark, and her 33 appearances on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. She's recorded 7 solo albums, for which she's received 3 Grammy nominations, in addition to appearing on over a dozen cast recordings. She toured in concert with Peter Allen and continues to sell out solo shows at the greatest venues around the world, including Radio City Music Hall, Carnegie Hall, the Hollywood Bowl, and the Sydney Opera House. Peters is the author of 3 children's books, supporting her work as co-founder of Broadway Barks, and has been extremely active on behalf of several charities, including serving on the board of trustees of Broadway Cares, Equity Fights AIDS. My impetus for doing this podcast was James Lapine's wonderful book, Putting It Together, you know, which was that oral history of Sunday in the Park with George. And I just wanted that kind of granular play-by-play of the creation of that show. And it Into the Woods is such a landmark show. And especially because of that incredible American Playhouse broadcast that you all did, that James Lapine directed so beautifully, preserving that production. And so many generations, that was really a gateway to Sondheim, to musical theater. And they you know, it's the internet generations. Nowadays, everything is online, for better or for worse. But all of the development of Into the Woods happened, you know, before that. And so those questions have not been answered. And, you know, I can just tell you that for me personally, when I was just getting into theater in middle school and, you know, Phantom and Les Mis were all the rage, and Sondheim had this, you know, feeling of being, I don't know, intimidating or intellectual. And when I turned on Into the Woods, and there were you, you know, who was this star that I had loved in Annie and The Jerk and Silent Movie and Fairy Tale Theater. I mean, you know, it was just such a an accessible experience that really it was my gateway. And so it's anyway, it takes the cake to be working on this podcast and get to chat with you.
Oh, thank you.
So, you know, I know I'm not alone, that for anyone looking at musical theater in the last 40 years, your name is, you know, very much linked with Sondheim, almost inseparably. But I'm curious about your relationship to him as either an artist or a person before Sunday in the Park with George and Into the Woods. I mean, you famously toured as a Hollywood blonde and later played June in Gypsy with Sondheim lyrics in the 60s, early in your career. And I've seen clips of you in the 70s doing an occasional Sondheim song. There was Barcelona and Broadway Baby. And I'm curious if there were other intersections, you know, did you know him? Did you see him at parties? Did you see his shows and think, I got to do one of these? Or were you considered for the original production of Follies or A Little Night Music or something? You know, where were you in the Sondheim?
No, I think when Follies, the original production, what year was that? I may have still been in high school. What year was
1971.
Oh, no, I was out of high school, but yeah, I would have been 22. Well, there were the young ones and the old ones, yeah. No, I wasn't. I don't know where I was, what I was doing. But I have to tell you, the first time I got kind of swept away by his music, I was in London doing either the Muppets or I did a special there with a Beatles special, if you can believe it. Wow. And we went to see Side by Side by Sondheim with Julie McKenzie and, mm-hmm. you know, and the next day I couldn't get the music out of my head, you know, and he was, they used to say years ago, oh, you can't hum one of his tunes. Well, I couldn't get the music out of my head. It was so wonderful and so permeating and stayed that way since then. And then I remember I ran into him once at Joe Allen's. I was at a table and he knew somebody at the table and he sat down with us. And that was it, basically.
Yeah.
Although I have to say there was another, I didn't meet him that night, but are you aware that there are people that other writers that he wish he had written a song and he has a whole list of, you
yes,
know,
that was one, so wonderful.
Yeah, one is Irving Berlin, who, you know, can't get a man with a gun. And one is a song, Charm, by William Roy. Now, I was in a William Roy show called The Penny's End. Yeah, off Broadway. And I think Steve, at that point, you know, knew about Billy because he loved that song. And he also was friends with the scenic designer. I think his name was Ben Schechter. And I found out later that Steve had been to the show and had loved the show. But I didn't meet him that night. So he was always, the future was calling me, it looked like, you know?
Yes. And in putting it together, James very generously shared the struggles that he went through to shepherd that show through, you know, like a strenuous process, of course, to a legendary triumph in the end. And several of the cast members of Into the Woods that I've talked to have commented on your good energy and your professionalism and the way that you led the company through the Into the Woods rehearsals and previews. And I'm curious, how did your experience through those ups and downs on Sunday prepare you? Was it a matter of just the confidence and trust you had in Sondheim and Lapine? Or, you know, how did that impact your experience in Into the Woods, having done Sunday with them?
Yes, I think that was exactly it. You know, I had such a beautiful experience in Sunday that I just would, you know, do And I learned so much about life, and I said, okay, I'm ready for my next experience. And so I said, absolutely, I would love to be in it. So, and then I knew I had such confidence in them and what they write and what they're about. So.
Well, so do you remember when you first heard that their next project was going to be this fairy tale mashup musical?
I think Steve had allegedly talked about what he was writing it. And I think he kind of hinted that he wanted me to be, you know, he was thinking of me as Cinderella, you know? I remember one or two times that passed through and I'm like, oh, and then I never heard about it anymore because Cinderella ended up being a soprano. and somehow I ended up in the show eventually when I came to New York.
Yeah. So you didn't see like the workshop at Playwrights Horizons when you were doing Song and Dance?
No, I didn't see any of it.
And then, I mean, because this has really been the great mystery to me, thinking about this show that, you know, of course, for all of us who only know the finished product, you are so imprinted on this material. And it's hard to even imagine it, you know, not having been a Bernadette Peters role. So when I think back that they were doing their next show after Sunday in the Park with George, just 2 years later, and, you know, why did it take so long? They had to go to San Diego and come back. Was there no talk before you got involved that maybe this could work out at some time?
No, none. No, I didn't even realize they were out in San Diego. You know, they were out in San Diego. And then on the way back, then I got a call from James. And I just, you know, was like, yeah, I'd love to be in it. So no, not at all. Not at all. I don't know if they didn't see me as the witch at first. And then they did. I'm not even sure why. But anyway, that's the way it went.
It's also somebody else, R.J. Cutler, who had been James's assistant, he had thought that maybe something changed where maybe they had always wanted you, but your availability changed where all of a sudden you could do it when they hadn't thought you could before. Does that ring a bell? Well,
you know, I'm not clear on that. I don't remember that. And I wonder if. I don't know. It's not ringing a bell, but it could be. I might be doing something else, and then I was free. But I don't remember that scenario. I'm not quite sure. Yeah, I don't remember that.
That's why I'm not doing this a moment too soon. I mean, it's just everybody's memories. I mean, because I always wondered, because I know you did not stay in Into the Woods on Broadway very long, and you had left in the spring. And you did two movies that I was a fan of at the time, Pink Cadillac and Slaves of New York. So I wondered if maybe one of those or both of those had been the reason that you couldn't stay longer in the Broadway production.
Yes, I left the show to go do Slaves of New York. Yeah.
Because then when RJ said that, I thought, oh, maybe Slaves, this was me trying to do the, you know, calculus. I said, maybe Slaves of New York got postponed and now she could do it. And that was the deal.
Yeah, no, I mean, to be really honest, I don't remember them ever offering it to me before they did offer it to me and I went into it. But I would never swear.
I mean, now I need a time machine. I want to go back and tell them in that original production of Follies to get you and then Into the Woods in San Diego. But also, there was like a workshop they did right before the Broadway rehearsal started. Were you able to get to see that before you came on board yourself?
No. And, you know, again, I don't know exactly where I was. I don't know if I was not invited. I don't remember if I was out of town, but I did not see it and was not even, I don't even think I was aware they were doing it.
So, that's the thing. Nowadays, it would be on playbill.com. We would all know everything. But then if you weren't involved.
Right. That's right. That's right. Now there's no secrets.
There's no secrets. Not at all. Also, then Paul Ford was telling me that once you were joining the cast, that there before the actual rehearsal started, there was like a reading at a townhouse just to get everybody together. Maybe there was a new version of the script or something. And that was the first time he remembers you being, you know, with everybody. Does that ring a bell?
That sounds familiar. I had to go back in my brain and try to. I had thought it sounds familiar to be in that setting.
Yes, yes. He was adamant that it was not Sondheim's townhouse. It was some other mysterious townhouse.
Maybe a producer or something.
Yeah, yeah. Producers do have townhouses. That's very possible. But so then getting into the actual material, one of the things that stands out so much of your performance that, you know, is so honestly iconic to so many people now is the comedy. And, you know, and it's such a incredible feature of the show, and your specifically your performance, that how much that enriches that, especially in the first act. And there's a clip on YouTube of you doing the Greens rap and other cast members doing some other of that section of the show in a rehearsal studio that maybe like the press was invited to. I don't know if it was New York One or something like that, you know, right before you moved into the theater. And it was notable to me to see that it was less funny. And I was wondering if the sort of, if that comedy took time to develop, or was it a new direction, a new choice that you made later in the process? Do you remember what that was like?
Well, my intention was to do it very broad at first. And James, and he was correct, did not want me to do that. Because the witch actually carried the words of wisdom, especially at the end when she sang The Last Midnight. And she was the word, she just was wise. So as the show went on, I found where the comedy could be, and still, you know, keep who the witch was with rather than do it like a clown with a lot of, you know, takes, just to do it, have a sense of humor in the scenes, make the scene, you know, figure out where the sense of humor was. And yet she still is very clear and sincere about life and what it's about.
You know, people are always asking me if I'm on Ozempic, and let me tell you, I do not mind them asking me that, but I'm not on Ozempic. They especially ask me that when they see me eating dessert or desserts or all the crap I eat when I'm out. But my secret is that when I'm home, when I'm by myself, I'm eating Factor. Factor sends me restaurant quality meals that are ready to heat and eat whenever I am. No prepping, no cooking, no cleanup except for like my fork. And now you can enjoy Factor Meals too. Go to factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 and use code giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off. That's code giantsinthesky50 at factormeals.com/giantsinthesky50 to get 50% off.
The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And then other than the comedy, do you remember other ways in which the witch evolved, either in the script or score or just in your performance?
Well, I remember that Lars Lubavitch, our choreographer, the first week of rehearsal, 2 weeks, would tie me up every morning because I was supposed to be all hunched over and crippled. So every morning he'd tie me up in ropes. And I go, oh my God. Until finally he said, you got it. We don't have to tie you up anymore.
You graduated. Wow. And You mentioned The Last Midnight, which I know was added sort of late in previews, and that you originally had this song, Boom Crunch. And Betty Buckley, who had done that workshop of Into the Woods, has talked about how much she struggled with that song. And of course, you know, we got the wonderful Last Midnight by the time the show opened. Do you remember struggling with Boom Crunch, or what was it that Last Midnight had that Boom Crunch didn't?
I think there was there might have been more wisdom in The Last Midnight than just Boom Crunch being scary and a bit vindictive, and but Last Midnight was trying to get them to give up the boy in the song, and trying to just impart how life is, some wisdom on them, and then of course they don't do it, and she basically sort of throws up her hands and goes back down to her hell.
The hell or the basement of the Martin Beck.
Exactly.
Well, and the other song that was cut that I have absolutely loved hearing people's stories about was the epic company number of Second Midnight. Do you remember that song?
No. Did we do it in New York?
Yeah, supposedly it was, there's a clip from a preview of it, although I guess people said it was like in maybe for one performance, but it was an incredibly long, complicated group number that most of you, that you certainly sang, and most of the cast sang with the parents and the children, and bits and pieces of it went into eventually Children Will Listen.
Mm-hmm. So I don't remember, because I remember that there was always the One Midnight Gone, and then we were all doing that with funny lines that would come, you know, especially Barbara Brin was wonderful, you know, and it was wonderful, but I don't remember the, you know, I let it go.
That's probably healthy.
We upgrade.
Somebody sent me Jean Louisa Kelly, who played Snow White and was one of the understudies. She sent me a picture of a t-shirt, I guess, that Tom Aldridge had given out that said Second Midnight Gone after the song was cut.
Oh, that's funny. That's smart. Right. That's great.
Second Midnight Gone.
Yeah.
What about the other changes to the show? I mean, one thing that seems so delicate and exquisite in the final show that we know and love is the tone. You know, it's really interesting to hear you talk about the wisdom and, you know, for example, on The Last Midnight, as opposed to you described the more vindictive quality of Boom Crunch. Was that something that you saw Lapine and Sondheim, you know, sort of trying to figure out as you went? Or was it more like Lapine had it in mind and just had to shepherd everybody to get there?
To be perfectly honest, I don't know. You know, when you have such an intense song like Boom Crunch, you're just trying to be in it and make it work. And then they said, now we're going to give you a different song. And I went, oh, really? And then I said, I've almost got it. I just need a, you know, by the end of the week. And he said, no, you don't have the end of the week. You the critics are coming tomorrow, so you have to get it.
Wow.
So I remember when I did finally perform it, the wings were full, the cast were all in the wings, like, you know, looking out, you know, and I had to like blank them out and just stay in my lane.
I mean, wow. Well, we're grateful they put you through that, even if it was hard for you at the time. How about Children Will Listen? I know that at least had not been in the earlier workshops in San Diego and all that. Was that something that came to you any at all later in the process?
When did he put that in? I think, didn't he add that after Rapunzel dies, then he added a section in there?
That's right, with the lament. It's kind of like Children Will Listen, yeah.
Yeah, the lament. But I do think the end had Children Will Listen.
Mm.
in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then speaking of the end, you had been gone from the show for some time when you came back to film it for American Playhouse. And one thing that I learned doing this podcast that I hadn't necessarily known before is that it wasn't just a random night in the show, that in fact you had left and several other of the cast members had left. And I think that partly explains the kind of rock concert response you get from the audience that's so magical on that video. But I'm wondering, besides the audience, was there anything different about revisiting the show having been away for a while?
Yeah, it's great because it's, you know it so well now, and you can just, you know, you're not hanging on every word, you understand what each scene is so much better, and you're just letting it fly. And and even to that point when we did the reunion at BAM and out in Los Angeles, that was like 29 years later, yeah. Where that is such a privilege to have lived 29 years more and bring all that knowledge of life back into a wonderful role. So that's a wonderful thing to do, a thrill.
I've heard you talk about that kind of experience of Sondheim's music and lyrics specifically before in other interviews. And it's really interesting to hear you say that in the context of revisiting a show that you created years before. You know, it really drives home, I think, what is so apparent to so many people is, like you say, the wisdom of Sondheim's work. And I love knowing that that was something that grew for you in coming back to it. I'm also curious about that video. You're obviously an extremely experienced film and television actor. And did that inform doing different things in those film performances of Into the Woods?
No, because I still knew I was on the stage. And yeah. I didn't think that we were in close-up or anything like that. I think that, you know, when you're in a scene, I was pretty sure that we're going to have everybody in the scene in the frame.
Yeah.
So for me, it was just still stage work, but more focused, I think, on making each scene was about.
Yeah. Right. And well, the other thing I loved seeing on YouTube was that when you did that 10th anniversary concert, you sang the Witch's duet with Rapunzel, Our Little World, that had been written later for Julia McKenzie in the London production. Did you love that? Did you wish that you'd had it in the first time around?
Well, you know, you can't look back, you know, over your shoulder. You just have to do, I was just trying to be in the moment that night. So I'm learning a new song. So it wasn't like, oh gosh, I wish. I just was trying to make it work. And a lot of times when you have a new piece of material, it has to settle in, and you only get to do it one night. So it doesn't get to settle in the same way.
Well, I hope you'll sing it again sometime and let it settle in. Pretty good on that YouTube video. You've actually done a bunch of the other character songs from Into the Woods out of context at various points. Most recently, I Know Things Now in The Old Friends on the West End. And of course, in your Sondheim Etc. concerts, Hello Little Girl, and many different times in many contexts, different albums, your definitive version of No One Is Alone, including on the Sondheim 90th birthday live stream at the beginning of the pandemic. And I think about these Sondheim scores that have so much integrity, where the songs really are of a piece from a particular show, whether it's Into the Woods or Follies or whichever. And I'm wondering if when you sing the Wolf's music on one occasion, does that change your understanding of singing Little Red Riding Hood's music on another?
Not really, because when I did the Wolf song, I did it with anything can, the Prince's song can happen in the woods, may I kiss you, so that was a whole other thing. Each song is unto itself, its own, for me, you know, its own thing. But it is about succumbing to the, you know, the charms of the other sex or wolf. And you know what that means and what you've learned, and basically that's what he was writing about,
you know? Yeah. And well, listen, there's a whole lot more of them that you haven't done and from the other shows that we're all dying to hear. And of course, I know I'm one of, you know, I think even 10 years ago, there was a Facebook group of like, you know, several hundred thousand people petitioning for you to play Mrs. Lovett and Sweeney Todd sometime. Are there any other Sondheim roles or individual songs that you haven't done that are still kind of on your wish list?
Well, what would you like to hear me sing?
Mrs. Lovett, with top of the list, no question.
You know, I watched, I just worked with Julia McKenzie in London. And I looked her up on YouTube doing Mrs. Lovett, and I went, oh my God, the brilliance of, you know, of what she did with it, and her voice and her comedy and her, you know. So, I haven't played that. I don't know if I ever will. I don't know, you know. I mean, in old friends, Leia Salonga's doing it, and she's doing a fabulous job. But you know, any of those roles is always fun to take on, because you always are, it's a challenge, and you're always learning something. And so that's the only one I guess I haven't really done, only show that I haven't. You know,
you've given us, you've been very generous in your Sondheim performances to us. No complaints. I'm wondering also, do you think more of a life for the old friends? I know everyone was so jealous of our friends that went over to London and saw you all do it. Do you think you might do that over here or anywhere else?
I don't know yet. I mean, I think they're looking into it, but I don't know yet.
And what, you know, there have been so many productions of Into the Woods since the iconic original. There have been, you know, a Broadway revival directed by Lapine, and the recent Broadway revival, and the amazing production in the park that was like steampunk. And there was a cool one off Broadway where they, you know, used found objects like horizontal blinds and things for the sets and costumes. And of course, there's the movie version. And I'm wondering if you've seen other versions over the years, and whether the impact that the show continues to have has surprised you, or maybe always been what you saw in it.
It pleases me. You know, when I saw this last production, the one that was encores, and then went to Broadway, and to see what legs it has and how the audience just eats it up. Mm. It just pleases me to no end, because when Steve wrote it, he sort of wanted to write, like, you know, something that was more accessible to people. And I'm pretty sure he mentioned Disney to me, you know, when he was writing it a little bit more. So it pleases me to no end that it has those kinds of legs. But if you examine each show that Steve and James wrote together, then you'll see how well could they, you know, nothing is just haphazard. Mm. It's thought out really well. I mean, that's the kind of mind that James has, and Steve. And when I went to see Passion. I saw Passion originally, and then I saw Passion over, is it called the Signature Theater, I think.
Oh, Classic Stage downtown?
Yeah, Classic Stage, yeah.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, yes, it works because it's so well constructed. You know, they were tearing it apart for whatever reasons back then, but because I think it was a shocking, you know, to do a show about that subject was just shocking to the audience, I think. But as a show, it's beautifully constructed, because they don't lose their way. They're not haphazard. They keep their thread, and they don't listen to people saying, oh, you think you should do this, and I think you should do that. I mean, they listen, but then they go back to, you know, why. I mean, Steve, I know for a fact, you know, when he would give me a note in the dressing room, and I said, well, can you do it that way? And he'd go, wait, let me think about that for a second. And then he goes, no, because of, and then he gave me the reasons, you know, X, Y, Z, and the character reasons, because he's thought of all of the choices that it could be beforehand. And James too. James would write monologues to give to Steve, and Steve would turn them, some of them, into songs. That's why Steve always loved having a collaborator.
Yeah. I'm so fascinated by their collaboration and what an incredible, you know, I guess second act it was for Steve at that point to have this totally new, beautiful direction, and that we got these really, you know, different shows that people couldn't have imagined before. I also know that you had to deal with a lot of magic, special effects, all kinds of stuff doing Into the Woods. I've talked to the stunt double witch, who had to do the elaborate hiding behind the tree and the elevator to make your transformation. I'm wondering, how was that for you in the run? Did things ever go wrong? Were there any kind of, you know, nowadays the Elphabas in Wicked, they have certain things called a no-fly performance where the hydraulics don't work and they have to do their big song Defying Gravity just standing down stage instead of on the, you know, riser. Was there a no-fly witch? Was there any sort of exceptions with that?
No. You know, everything always seemed to work. I'm sure if something happened, we would have figured out something else to do, like, you know, cover me and I'll exit stage left and then I'll enter stage left. You know, I mean, that's what you do in the theater because it's live performing. But no, we never had a plan. And thank goodness the elevator always seemed to work and I always got up there in time. And it was always, I'm amazed that James, you know, he conceived that, you know, of how that was going to work and how that was going to happen. And I guess he was thrilled when it worked.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you said earlier, which was the sort of preconceived notion people had early in Sondheim's career about the music not being hummable or, you know, whatever they would call it. And I think that a lot of people have talked about how Side by Side by Sondheim did really start to change the narrative about that because those songs were just so great and people couldn't deny it anymore. But another thing that has come up a lot when people have talked about their experiences in Into the Woods is, of course, Bernadette Peters, this, you know, celebrated star of stage and screen. And because your career started at such a young age, I think that you were always connected to people who were older than you in show business. And so they talked about the night Tony Bennett came backstage and Into the Woods and, you know, just these sort of global legends that were, you know, people coming to see Bernadette. I'm curious over the years, whether it was Into the Woods or Sunday in the Park with George, did you start to see that narrative about Sondheim's being melodic? Did you see that change when the sort of old guard of show business was around during all these shows you were doing and you know, the younger generations were just embracing Sondheim more wholeheartedly?
I'm not sure that it happened. What would the word be? Financially for him, that they were like out and out hits. I don't think they were ever out and out hits because he would pick, you know, Pacific Overtures or he'd pick Sweeney Todd and can you believe that? It's about a man, about them killing people and eating them. But then as people got to know the music and the show and the scores and how deep they went. That's why I always love singing his music because it goes, just when you think it's about this, it's not, it's about even deeper, you know, because he's He writes about the human condition and human feelings and human emotions. And that's what I think eventually people connected to. What he was, you know, the human condition he was writing about, even back there in London, you know.
Yeah. Well, you certainly mine it. I mean, you know, speaking of that, one of my favorite all-time Sondheim recordings is your recording of Joanna. And it really brings that out for sure.
That happened because when I heard Victor Garber sing that, and I was like, oh my God, it's that the words and the notes of I feel you is so intimate and beautiful that I had to sing it. I'm just singing it, you know.
Well, we're ready for Sondheim, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Or more Sondheim, et cetera. You can call it whatever you want. You just have to record it.
Yeah. The rest of it, maybe.
There you go. There you go. We're good. Is there anything else you would want to share with me? You've been so incredible answering all my questions. I'm so grateful.
You have to be careful playing the witch, because Julia McKenzie told me she got, from wearing those fingers, she got arthritis.
Oh.
She did. Those damn fingers gave me arthritis.
Wow.
But, knock wood, I didn't have that problem.
Glad to hear it.
Interesting to talk to everyone played in the show.
God, I might need to do a second season all about that London production.
That Julia did?
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Jackie Dankworth came on this podcast because her mom, Cleo Lane, had done the tour of your production. And she said that when her mom came, because Jackie played Cinderella in that Julia McKenzie production. And she said that when Cleo came to see it, she said, it was better on Broadway.
Yeah, well, you know, everyone has their opinions.
That's right. Well, I think they're all high opinions of you. So thank you so much for sharing with me. And this is really a gift to all the fans of the show.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, well, I will look forward to seeing you either in the Old Friends on Broadway or your next show.
Okay, thank you.
All right, take care, Bernadette. Thank you for listening to Giants in the Sky, How Sondheim and Lapine Went Into the Woods on the Broadway Podcast Network. Look out for episode 51 with Maureen Davis, the original Sleeping Beauty and Stunt Witch.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.